Welcome to episode 412 of the Pop Culture Roundtable, the podcast that's reunited and it feels so good. In this episode, we talk about the state of award shows, Psychonauts, and the world's greatest art heist. I'm Andrew Sale.
I'm Lauren Rubin.
I'm Patrick Hill.
So put on your power pants and track jackets, because it's time for this gang to hit the streets.
Stay off my turf!
Kick off every episode by going around the table, which is where we talk about something new, fun, and noteworthy about our weeks. Patrick, you weren't here last week, so you kind of got to fill us in on the two.
What was I doing?
Just now? I have no idea.
I am familiar with what I was doing just now.
Good Lord.
Where was I? What was I doing last week?
I don't know.
You're hanging out with your mom, right?
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking,
yeah, that's
you know what? Speak of the devil. I was. Yeah. We flew to Chattanooga. We flew to Chattanooga.
This is a good start.
Please say Chattanooga with a French accent.
Chattanooga.
Wouldn't it be if it was French?
Wouldn't it be
Chattanooga?
I like Chattanooga.
Some French person just picked up their baguette and used it to reach their like radio to turn it off right now, so I have to listen to us. Is what just happened?
Because we come in on old school radio radio waves in France,
and they are not listening on their phone.
No.
2-day old baguette, so you can for sure.
you could put an eye out with one of those.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It would go straight through a car door.
Do you think a fresh baguette could like unlock your phone though?
Ooh.
I don't know that it's warm enough. Doesn't it have to have like skin warmth?
No, it doesn't have to have warmth. No.
Yeah, because you can't like tap it with a pencil.
It has to be fleshy and like, it has to be like a...
Yes, okay, yes. The texture does have to be there. The texture of a flesh, but not temperature. I'm about 90% sure, because like you can use a stylus and a stylus isn't warm to the touch. You know
but
what
that's
I mean?
Like a specific stylus. Tool made to be recognized by your phone.
Right. Yes.
So no other criteria would work anyway. Is what I mean.
What are we talking? Are we making an argument that a baguette couldn't actually be used? Because I don't think it's fleshy enough.
I don't think it works.
I agree.
We need to go to a bakery and test this. It's the only way to know.
My flesh is the consistency of a cornhole bag. And so I wonder if I could unlock my phone with a cornhole bag.
Do you mean a bean
bag? No.
I feel like cornhole bag. I mean, I guess it is kind of like a bean bag.
Cornhole bag paints a picture. And I think that's a picture that needs to be painted. Yeah.
So... I'll try. I don't have cornhole, but
I'll. Not since the summer of 98.
Not since what I did to those cornhole bags. Next time I'm around, I don't know why I'm touching myself. Andrew's touching himself. I'm touching myself.
I'm touching my head out of exacerbation. You're touching other parts for other reasons.
It's fine. Okay.
What a start.
Surprise party. Going to Chattanooga for a surprise party and to pick up my mom and like shuttle her over here.
Whose surprise party was it?
The Cottrells. I mean, not both of theirs. Lauren's. The wife.
Nice.
The girl.
Like a birthday party or just a party?
Yeah, I'm gonna get there. But okay. Here's what happened. So we got invited. And it's kind of one of those like, hey, we're inviting you, but... And we totally want you to be there.
But we know you live 1,000 miles away.
And you're not going to come, but we still would love you to be there, whatever, if it happens to work out.
That's so like getting an invite to a destination wedding.
Yeah.
Exactly. They want the gift, but they don't want you to fly to Hawaii.
Oh, and I got to buy the sport coat?
Yeah, not.
So we decided to do a spur of the moment trip. I have Sky Miles, so figured, you know, we could make it happen and kind of kill 2 birds with 1 stone, visit some family. And take care of that bird problem they have. So I did not know that it was a surprise party. And so like once we got invited and once we booked the tickets, we immediately got a, we put together a group chat with them and us, like me and Mackenzie and them. And Mackenzie's like, are you sure we can text? Like, is this a surprise? And I said, listen, Jonathan would have told me if it was a surprise. There's no way he would have invited us and not mention like, hey, you should keep this under wraps. So I said, it's totally fine. I said, if you're worried, don't say we're coming for your party. Just say we're excited to see y'all next weekend. Mm-hmm. So just omit the party, right? So Mackenzie texts, and then immediately before any responses happened, Jonathan sends me a private message and goes, this was a surprise. Now, good thing is your boy knows how to lie. I like you have no idea how much of my life is a lie. So I went to work just being myself. She had no clue. Like, we put it all together. Oh, it's your birthday. That's such a coincidence. Weird. Well, hopefully we can run into y'all while we're there, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, like, well played.
How would I have known it's your birthday? I don't even have a Facebook. That's crazy timing, you know? But then what happened is Mackenzie went and did surprise her to get nails done before the party. So then any suspicion she had, she thought like, oh, this was the surprise. Mackenzie like went like surprised me to get our nails done.
Yeah.
So anyway, so then when she showed up to the party, she had no freaking idea. I am cold as ice when I'm not telling the truth. So anyway,
That means you can't unlock your iPhone, by the way.
I cannot use my phone 80% of my life. So anyway, did that, brought my mom back. We did things that families do, not like weird families, but normal families. And that was that whole thing. I got my hair cut. Yeah. That's not what I was going to tell you. Cool. When I got my hair cut, I talked to my barber, Chuck. Mm-hmm. Chuck is a good dude. I don't know if he's ever listened to this show.
No, because he always calls it a blog whenever he talks to me about it.
You guys have the same barber?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yes.
That's cute.
Chuck has a stutter. And I don't know if I've ever told my stutter story about Sketch, my Sketch stutter story on the show. If I haven't, I'll tell it at some point in the future. I still feel bad about it, and so I try not to tell it very often because it's one of the things in my life that I remember, and I don't like myself when I remember it.
It's one of the things in your life that you remember? What does that mean? Like, you only have a handful of things that you remember?
You have events that, like, you'll recall from your younger self, and you're just like, oh, God, why did I do that?
Oh, I see.
Like, okay. Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
It's one of those things that makes me want to not exist. But it's hilarious, so we'll tell it later. But anyway, so Chuck was telling me that Chuck and I talk about, for whatever reason, we talked about WeWork a lot. And the reason we did is when I was at Sketch and did Community, it was around this. So WeWork spaces were pretty good at hosting events and meetups, and so WeWork was in the conversation a lot. Well, when I was at Sketch was when WeWork's failed IPO happened, and it's when their valuation went from like $40 billion to $4 billion overnight. Very, very crazy stuff. So, and also at the same time, they were building a WeWork across the street from the barbershop. They were outfitting a building when he was downtown. So we talked about WeWork all the time, and we talked about how crazy and ridiculous all the things going on behind the scenes were. Well, the documentary finally came out on Hulu. So there's a Hulu documentary that covers the rise and the fall of WeWork and focuses on the CEO and his kind of attitude behind the company and how it drove it to where it did. And I got to watch the documentary that week, and it is fascinating. Now,
really want to watch that.
It is only the tip of the iceberg of the story. There is so much more story there that it just doesn't even touch on. But that said, I watched it with this is the metric I have to put out there, like the litmus test. I watched it with my wife, and my wife stayed engaged the entire time. So it is an engaging documentary. That's my recommendation this week. Go check out that documentary on Hulu. I think it's literally like WeWork, the rise and fall, or something like that. You'll be able to find it quickly. It's probably sitting on your homepage.
Search WeWork if you can't find it.
Yep. Anyway, so he just messed up my beard is what I was trying to say. But it's okay.
It looks nice. What are you talking? What did you miss?
I wasn't trying to say that. I was trying to tell about WeWork. Okay. Like, I then tried to make it funny on the end. That's all happening to me.
You're a class act. Andrew, and that's what's important to know.
When did you get your haircut last?
It was probably 3 weeks ago. Yeah, it's probably 3 weeks ago. So speaking of haircuts, here's what happened this week. I got some stuff. Not a haircut, but some other things. Segway.
That was brilliant.
You got a segue this week?
I got a segue this week.
That is incredible.
All right, so a couple weeks ago, I told you guys about that game from Neil Patrick Harris, Box One, and I told you that I ordered his box of cards from Theory 11. Well, I got his cards.
And you told me you were going to give me that game.
I did, yes. And when I see you next, I will bring it with me. I saw you the other day, but it was like an impromptu, like I wasn't planning on seeing you. That's why I didn't have it.
If only I invited you to more things.
If only we were actual friends outside of this podcast, the world could be a different place.
Relationship is in shambles. Peek behind the curtains.
Sham shams. Sham shambles. All right. So I got this deck of cards. It's really great. Like the artwork on the cards is great. Classic deck of cards. The back of the card has a really nice design to it. But what makes this deck of cards special is that it's not just a deck of cards. It's a whole nother game, and I just dropped a card.
Oh, that's cool.
Solitaire. It can also be for resale. You're not going to believe what you can do with this deck of cards.
All right. You see these two cards?
Mm-hmm.
These are special cards. This I'll tell you what this card says, and then I won't tell you anything else. But it says, this is going to be a challenge. Just as a spider spins its web, I've taken a page out of Cardano's book and created a puzzle. Look upon photos and images inside this deck. You can do this. Just look closely at the cards. Good luck. NPH. Oh. And then you get this like weird like coded cipher that has no meaning to it on its own. But when you pair it with some other things in the deck, after a long time of trying to figure that out, I figured it out. And after staring at these cards for probably an hour, I figured out the first step. And then it sends you on this journey. And it is really, really intricate puzzle that requires you to use technology. It requires you to think with your mind and like use all sorts of different resources that are available to you. It's really, really cool. I got to the end of it and completed it. And I think if I had completed this, because afterwards I went online and I looked up some things to see like what happens next. And it used to be when you completed it, you got a hand signed letter from Neil Patrick Harris with a couple of special pins.
Oh.
But I think that was like a limited time deal, like when it was first out, because it came out in, I think, 2018, 2019. And now I think enough people have done it that you don't get that anymore, because
it's probably like first come, first serve. Yeah.
Yeah. When I completed it, I got like a congratulations, you won, but I didn't get any further correspondence after that. With Box One, when I completed it, I did get some further correspondence that led to some other things. So I'm thinking that I don't get any of those bonus things, but it's a really, really cool thing. And the deck of cards, like the box, is like gold foil and embossed and absolutely phenomenal, like anything that Theory 11 does. It's $10, and you have a great deck of cards plus several hours worth of like fun sleuthing that you get to do and puzzle solving. So I would recommend you go get that. There's a link to it in the show notes. I've been doing some watercoloring. I talked about that last week. An issue with watercolor for me is the paint is so translucent, and that's good. It works really well for building up colors and whatever. But it's not good for layering colors on top of other colors, because the colors just mix together because the paint is so water soluble.
Mm-hmm.
In my head, it was always the next step up was acrylic, which is completely opaque. Right. So you go from like mostly translucent to, 100% opaque paint. And that wasn't a good jump for me, because I don't feel like that was the right thing. Mm-hmm. And so I just did a little bit of research, and I had heard this word before. I've even used it before, but I had been using it kind of without knowing what I was talking about in the art world. And it's gouache paint.
Oh, yeah. So, I was literally about to ask. I was like,
wait, spell it.
G-O-U-A-C-H-E, I think.
Oh, I always say gouache when I would see it.
Gouache. I think it's squash.
Well, yeah, just meat. No, I'm sure it's I'm sure it's squash. I am positive I'm the one that doesn't know. But I'm just saying I've seen the word before and just seeing it on a piece of paper, just internally, I've just always read it gouch. Gouch.
Yeah, yeah.
So so I'm like, you know, but so gouache paint is an in between watercolor and acrylic paint. It is a water-soluble paint, but it is much more opaque, and the amount of water that you add to it is what dilutes it, or the amount of water you don't add to it is what keeps it as opaque. So you can really run the gamut. It works really well in addition to watercolor paint. You can use it on its own, or you can use it to highlight colors within your your watercolor. So I took a little bit of a leap, and I went online and was looking up some stuff. Found some highly rated gouache paint, and I got this. Can you see this?
It is wow, 56, that's awesome.
A 56 color gouache paint set, and these come in these little tubs, and this whole container seals, and so once you open up the paint, then you put this whole lid back on, and it seals all of the paint together. And keeps it fresh.
Man, this is so up your alley.
Yeah,
this
even the packaging.
So many itches for you.
You don't even know. This thing pops out. Oh. This thing pops out, and you can carry it.
Can you use the lid as a palette as well?
Yeah, I'm sure you could, actually. Yeah, I didn't think about that, but you totally could. It's made out of the same like plastic material that the the palettes are made out of. There are so many colors in this. Like, I don't even know where to start.
Beautiful.
But I like that I can add white now. I can add white as a highlight to things without it becoming diluted. Like white watercolor, it may as well just be putting plain water on.
I don't even understand
on your paint.
Yeah, like other than what do you even use it for, really? Because it doesn't.
I think you just literally use it to tone back your colors.
Sure.
Like using plain white, putting opacity on,
turning it down or something.
You can tone back your colors when you're mixing your paints. I think that's the only thing it's used for. I've not been able to figure out how to effectively use it. Well, now I don't have to, because now I have some gouache paints. Yeah. So I'm excited to use those this week. Really excited about that. Two more things that I watched, just a real quick hit, and then I have one final thing to talk about that I got that I'm really excited about. The Circle. Patrick, you missed me talking about The Circle last week.
I heard you talking about The Circle because I edit the show, and yes. Mackenzie and I watched the second season of it.
Okay, it was you, though, who brought that up originally, right, Patrick?
Yeah, I watched the first season when it came out.
All right. I love it.
I had to figure it out.
I love that show. I actually watched all of up to season two, right? I watched all of
Isn't
up to season two.
Isn't it coming out weekly?
Was possible.
They dropped like half the season's episodes, and then I think now the rest are weekly, maybe?
No. Next week is...
Oh, they dropped like the other half or something.
They're dropping the final three. I think they did it in 3 week segments.
Okay.
Like three episodes a week, I think is how they've
done
it.
Are you caught up?
And then the finale is next week. Yes, I'm caught up. And on top of that, I got caught up after we recorded our last episode. And
as you said, you would.
And then when I finished it, it showed me at the bottom, viewers also watched The Circle France.
Yep.
There are five seasons of The Circle France. So I started watching The Circle France.
Oui,
oui. Yes. And it all comes full circle, baby.
Firm circle.
Ooh, firm circle.
I don't know that's better than fur circle, which is what I said. So.
Ooh.
I watched season one initially, and I did enjoy it. I really liked, I'll just say, the people that ended up at the end. I really enjoyed the people. Watching season two, I did make the mistake of turning that on episode one while my mom was here, and that's a very, I don't know, it was just the
it's
wrong...
It's not a good mom show.
It was the wrong vibes. So we had to turn it off till she left, and then we went and binged all the episodes. So... I remember liking season one of The Circle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I felt that strongly about season two of The Circle. Definitely as we get deeper into it, I find it's becoming more engaging again. But since you watched them so closely together, you didn't have this whole like year-long or year-and-a-half-long break. Do you think season two is as strong as season one, and I'm just not remembering it very well?
It's not as strong, but I think it's because we already know kind of what to expect. So like so much of what was so good about the first season was that it was uncharted territory. You didn't know, and the rules changed from week to week, and you didn't know what to expect. And now it's kind of like Big Brother, where their catchphrase now is expect the unexpected. Okay. It's like that, right? So you go into it with a little bit less mystery. You go into it with a little bit more, you know, understanding. But it is still as engaging, I think. I mean, some of the things that some of the curveballs that they've thrown, like the latest curveball in the final episode so far, is pretty intriguing. Like, I'm excited to see what they do with that. So, yeah. So I have watched at least one episode of all of them, at least the ones that I've seen. They film them all in the same building. Like, they're all in the same place. So I don't know, wherever this place is, it's all the same place. So I'm guessing they have outfitted this building and they just bring different people in from around the world and film over the course of a couple weeks or however long this thing takes place. And then they shuttle in a new group of people from a different region while they're editing and premiering the other ones. Like, it makes total sense from a production standpoint that they would have it like a central location. They bring everyone to it and they do the same thing.
Big shout to whoever does the soundproofing in that building.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So, Andrew, since you've watched all three of them, how do you feel like are the international ones like any different than the U.S. one somehow? Or
is there like a lot of nudity in the Brazil one?
Or, I mean, honestly, the French one as well could.
Yeah, I haven't seen
Big Brother's
nudity.
Different that way. Like, if you see Big Brother in other countries, like what obviously what's allowable by standards is totally
now
different.
I wonder if this is a Netflix show everywhere, or if this was kind of imported from something else, because Netflix won't show nudity in that regard, I don't think. Maybe they will. I don't know. I guess I don't know that I've ever seen nudity on Netflix.
For people that are coming from like a Big Brother background or something like that, you know, like there's full language and F words and all that. Right. I mean, it's definitely
a more not safe for work version of Big Brother, and it scratches the itch of Big Brother for sure. But it's got some unique abilities to it. So anyway, I really like that show. I'm just singing the praises of it. I would tell anyone to go watch it, unless you're Patrick's mom. And then
she didn't like it.
The other show that I binge watched again in the last week was The League.
I love that show.
Like, I watched that show from beginning to end again. That show is also not safe for work. Just so
for Alan not to come. I've still only seen like the first three seasons of it, but I think it's absolutely hilarious.
There's like 7 or 8 seasons. Like, there's a lot.
Yeah, it was on for a long time. I missed that show. It was like
I don't know that you could get away with that show now, though. Is the thing?
Yeah.
Like,
I've been watching a lot of like It's Always Sunny, which like I think shares some like, you know, DNA with The League a little bit. And like, I feel like they can get away with a lot because the conceit of Always Sunny is that everyone is a jerk. Like, they know, like, everyone is in bad taste. So yes, they're making offensive jokes, but everyone is in on that fact, you know? So yeah, it holds up in a very different way.
I think that's the same. I think the same is true with The League, though.
Yeah, I think and like they're similar, but some stuff in The League I don't think is.
It's pretty. Yeah. It's pretty intense. Yeah.
Do y'all know who David Koechner is?
Mm-mm.
No.
He's who plays Champ off of Anchorman.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Like, he's in The Office. Mm-hmm. He's the traveling salesman or whatever.
Yeah.
Similar thing. We were watching episodes of The Office this past week, and his character, like, I don't think he can play a TV character anymore, because he kind of has that. I know he ad-libbed a lot of his lines. Like, that was the deal, is that that's what we found out on the Office Ladies podcast, is that he was one of those people that he just kind of came in and just, he brought his energy and
was told to be a person, and that person is no longer acceptable in the workforce.
Right, exactly. But there were a couple of lines that I realized, like, I kind of had this moment of like, oh, I don't like that. You know, and it didn't used to hit me that way, but it does now.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually having this conversation the other day with somebody about how I am much more attuned to those kinds of things now than I would have been before, because we have this platform where thousands of people listen and it's a global audience and all these things. So like, I'm just really in tune with that, really trying to understand when something is okay versus when it's not okay. And I'm like trying to err on the side of it not being okay, and just assuming that I don't know what I'm talking about when it comes to things that I don't know what I'm talking about. And so, but that show, you know, all of these shows that we just listed, on some level, they probably wouldn't get made at least the same way today. And so, I don't know. So the final thing that I want to talk about is something that I ordered a year ago or more, and it finally came in, and I'm just going to show you the box. Ooh. From here. This would be the Hot Toys 6th scale Mandalorian and the Child Deluxe figure.
Deluxe, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the Deluxe figure. Oh, wow. And let me just show you what it looks like IRL after showing you box.
Is this a statue or is this like
articulation? It's a 6th scale figure.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, and I'll show you.
Because you have the Boba Fett like premium statue.
I sold one of those, and it was incredible. But this is,
oh my gosh,
the 6th scale, and as you see, like
that's
this is
really
just
awesome.
One. He's fully articulated. He comes with like lots of accessories. Like the accessory that I'm showing you right now that he has is his flamethrower.
That Beskar looks
is coming
good.
Out.
Yeah,
the Beskar looks way good. His jetpack, like he can be standing or he has like a holder in the back that he can be standing. He wears real cloth clothing except for his armor, which is like a, you know, it's the Beskar is shiny, like plastic, really nice. Again, fully articulated.
Wait, it's plastic? It's not metal?
It's not metal, no. But like the intricacy of the design of his like weapons and such, like I don't understand how they do this. Like I'm consistently impressed with it. So that's him. Here's the child. He comes in his little pram, his little floatable pram.
Even he comes out detailed.
Yeah, he comes out. He's magnetic.
Oh, nice.
He just comes out. they do a lot of affixing via. Come on, focus. They do a lot of affixing things by using magnets as opposed to like pegs and things. Mm-hmm. Most
Can
of
I
the
ask
stuff
you something?
Is magnets.
When you
now.
Just said. When you just said the word focus under your breath, was that like a small pep talk?
Yeah. Oh, come on, man. Focus. You got to get through this. and then it comes with like this little... so I showed you this beforehand, Lauren. It's the container that holds the Beskar, but it comes with this light up.
Oh.
Like, look at that. It
Dude,
lights up.
Now inside. I get what it is.
This That's thing folds rad. Up. The Beskar comes Wait. Out. Even the Beskar is magnetic, and so there's stacks of Beskar
oh my
that are
gosh.
Magnets that stack together to fit inside of this little container.
It's actually like the little Cantono thing from the show. Like that's really
yes.
cool. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. there's so much more that I'm not showing you because it's in the box because this is the deluxe set. It comes with lots of extra accessories. It comes with a hologram of him. It comes with several sets of hands to hold different weapons and do different things. But it also, besides the Baby Yoda that comes in the pram, it also comes with a separate Baby Yoda.
Oh,
that
wow.
you can use for different sets. So like either him in the pram or him standing there.
Is he eating
And he has
frogs?
His little... No, this is his necklace. This is the necklace that he gives him.
Mm-hmm.
That's that hanging around his neck. But again,
got it.
You know, you can swap the heads of the Baby Yodas. They pop off and you can swap them. So one of them has a mouth closed. One of them has his mouth open. It's insanely detailed. So, so cool. I'm excited to put it up on the shelf. I've been waiting until this episode to show you guys before I post any pictures of it online. And I've had it for like the last 3 or 4 days. And I've been dying to post pictures of it because it's so freaking cool. But you can purchase them. It says it's up for pre-order still, but they're shipping now. So I don't know what exactly that means.
Maybe it's a second round of orders or whatever.
There'll be a link to it in the show notes, but Hot Toys, you did it again, you crazy kooks. Okay, cool. Lauren, take us home around the circle. Around the...
It works. Okay, so this week, definitely the coolest thing that I got to do was yesterday, and you guys were very cool to let us record today to accommodate this. But I actually was a guest speaker at my college, which I've never done before. And I was super nervous to do, but it was really cool. So I don't know if like either of you guys went to art school. I don't. Andrew, mm-hmm. did you?
Okay, I did not go to art school.
When you.
Not proper art school.
Sure,
not,
sure.
Like, for a degree.
I went to like pure art school, like exactly what you picture the like cartoon version of that or whatever. And kind of when you're done, the kind of big culmination is your senior thesis project. And it's very different than, I think, like regular college. You actually like usually build an exhibit, and thesis night is like a really huge deal. Like people come from all over. You can get like job offers there. Like it's really fun. But the seniors are all done with their exhibits. They're all built and everything, but they're putting them online this year, starting next week. So you guys can go check out all of the senior thesis exhibits for all of MIAD, which is really, really cool. I'm actually super excited to see what everybody did, because I used to absolutely love like going to this, like before I did mine, during mine, and after. It's like a super fun gallery night. What's up?
How scary was this experience?
Terrifying. None of us had slept for like 3 days prior, because you're like getting everything like perfectly ready. And like mine, I did all these like wine bottle designs.
Can I clarify? Are you talking about your thesis, or are you talking about going back and speaking, Patrick?
Oh, yeah.
The thesis.
Okay.
But yeah, like also like a huge portion of your grade is based on your thesis, like 50%. So like you really want to do a good job. And like mine was super elaborate. I had like all these wine labels that I made. And so like I cleaned off wine bottles I got from restaurants and like put on all my own custom labels that I had to cut out and everything. So like that's just like one example of like what people do. Yep. It's like a huge variety of stuff. That's intricate.
What an awesome way to cover up being like a wino.
I actually went to like restaurants and bars and just like asked for their like bags of extra wine bottles so I could have enough that all matched each other as well, because I'm crazy. And I had to make sure they were like the right types of bottles for wines, because I'm a crazy perfectionist.
Did you feel prepared to do a thesis? Like, did anyone feel prepared to do it, or does everyone kind of feel like they shouldn't be
there? You work on it for the whole year, like, sure, or the whole second semester. So like it doesn't feel like you're just like thrown in the deep end, you know, like, and you work with your teacher to come up like what the topic is going to be. And you're like checking in all the time of like what your progress is and stuff. People still every year don't finish, which is like crazy. But you know, deadlines are deadlines. It can be tough.
We had I had a object oriented programming class. Doesn't sound nearly as fun as what you're talking about. And we were given, so we had you know, like 30% of our grade was our tests. Then like 10% of the grade was like attendance maybe, or some junk like that. I don't know, something dumb. I don't know. Even though it's college, it wasn't a great college.
Yeah.
But then there's like this big 60% of the grade that was a project. It was this final project. And what we were given the bones to a mobile game. So like you already had a map that a character could move around, a character could pick things up, like all that already existed. And then you had to then decide, like flesh it out into some type of game, right? If you go like the dungeon crawler route or whatever, you have to decide That's there was already some...
That sounds awesome. Yeah.
And there was already some, like... I didn't do anything on it. Dude, my partner did all the freaking work. Like, it was the one time I was like, I got paired with the smart kid, or the kid smarter than me, I should say, and he was keen to do it, so have fun. By the way, he makes a lot more money than me. He lives in Denver now, and good for him. But...
he's telling that same story right now, and he's talking about this loser that
That dude doesn't make any money now. He's stuck in bum Texas. Like, what an idiot. So we all got the starter, and then we had to build on top of that. We had a guy show up. This is the week of presentations. We're given that 16 weeks prior. It's literally like the week of presentations, which means it's the class before, because our class only met Tuesday, Thursday. Not only had he not finished a game, he had broken some of the base functionality in the code he was given on week one. He had managed to make a net
negative progress
on his... And now...
You're a wizard, Harry.
All that to say, that guy is also making more money than me, because he became some writer that travels around doing like blogging about
food
and stuff.
That man was Anthony Bourdain.
What that man is not a developer. Like, clearly he was in the wrong field. He's making a lot of money, but not doing development. So
he had big ideas. They just didn't fit in the developer box.
Yeah. No, and he broke the box. They would have fit in the box. He broke the box. It's whatever. So
yeah. But that sounds pretty cool. Like, I think people have actually like made their own games for their thesis and stuff. So it's like a big variety of stuff. I'm super excited to check out what everybody made. And it's also like, it's the whole school. It's not just like illustration. It's so it's graphic design, product design, interior design, architecture, all kinds of cool stuff.
That's
so
cool.
I'm very excited to check it out. I'll have a link in the show notes, but it's just seniorexhibition.maya.edu. So it's pretty easy to remember.
That's right.
But it starts next week. So I'm very excited to check that out. And if you're looking to hire new artists, these are all fresh kids out of school and they're, you know, put up with 2020 as their senior year. So
you say they're French kids?
Oh, wait, wait.
They're French kids from out of school?
My accent has been different every time, I want to point out. I need to go cut them and put them side by side.
I love that I am from France.
For some reason, I just keep adding...
Listen to my French accent.
It gets harder and harder to tell what I'm saying. It's just more of like a rrr sound. It's what it's turning into.
It's a workshop on French accents today.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God.
Okay, so a couple other things that have been going on this week. You guys know I love Drag Race. Well, they had the finale this week. Congratulations to the winner, Simone. It was very obvious she was going to win all along, so I'm just excited that it all panned out as it should.
So no spoilers there, because you knew it was going to happen all along.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think a lot of people who watch this, who listen to this, watch Drag Race.
Already know what happens.
No reason to.
I mean, you got to keep up with the finales. You can't just like wait a week. Like that's like go on Twitter and it's just as dangerous. But that's speaking true. Of announcements that have been brought up on social media, Patrick or camera viewer Mackenzie posted this morning. But in our Slack, you guys brought up this Housewives Vacation show. And I have to talk about this. So Peacock TV is kind of doing their own version of basically like Real Housewives All-Stars. And it's called Housewives Vacation. I'm on the fence if I want to be excited for this or not, because I was talking in the Slack, like, I don't think they chose wisely of who they put together, because it's all people who probably aren't going to fight with one another. I think they gave each other, all of them, like, allies. So, like, that helps for one thing. And then, like, they're just not the people who are the biggest, like, you know, hitsters or anything. So it's like, I don't, like, Kenya is for sure, but she doesn't have any reason to pick fights with these people and, like, probably wants to play nice so she doesn't get, like, fired from Bravo. So, like, I don't see her, like, picking a fight with, like, the other biggest celebrities on the network. So, like, I think they could have recast this, and I actually made up my own, like, fun fan casting of, like, what would be better, because, like, this is, like, a version that would be an absolute, like, show. There would be so much drama.
Your fear is that there won't be enough drama on this season.
Oh, yeah. I think they played it way safe with who they picked to put in the house together, because it's all people who will play nice. There's not people who aren't going to play
along. So who would you pick? Who would you sub out?
Okay, so I would definitely... like, Kenya is literally the only one I would keep.
I don't know what a Kenya is. So Kenya is assume okay, we have no idea.
I was like, you do, because you watch the show. So Kenya Moore from Real Housewives of Atlanta. I think she should stay.
We don't watch Atlanta. We watch... not that I watch anything.
And when you say we, you mean you and Mackenzie, not you and I.
New York, yeah. Roni.
Okay, yeah.
We see the Mormons.
The Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Beverly Hills. Those are like the three mainstays.
Yes.
Atlanta has like weird sex parties, and I don't think Mackenzie's into that.
They do this season. That's actually true. Okay, so why Kenya is like great for this show is she is the ultimate like... shitster in all of the Housewives franchises, I think, and she plays really dirty, but she's very good at being a housewife. Like, she will lie her face off, but she's very charismatic, so I think, like, she's a good player in this, like, they're doing. Okay, so I want one from, like, each show. I don't want them all to have buddies, though there are some people I think would make friends. I don't think it's good to, like, start them off with allies, like they obviously did. So I think you'd pick Teresa. Oh, she's also there. I forgot. So Teresa from Real Housewives of New Jersey, because for the like name recognition, I think she's probably like the most famous housewife. So she'd be a good one to have. She also like probably won't cause a lot of her own drama, but always gets involved in other people's drama. So she would be a good person to have.
Your whole goal is that someone dies by the end of this.
No, I just, like You've never watched, like, the vacations are just like ultimate drama. Like, if they're doing like a Housewives vacation thing, I need this to be crazy.
Why can't they just have a nice vacation?
That's not why we watch it on TV. That's not why it should be on TV.
Your goal is someone dies. All right, who's the next one?
Okay, so they should get Gisele Bryant from Real Housewives. I cannot talk. Real Housewives of Potomac.
Don't even say Real Housewives again, because I'm going to cut in that other piece every time that you said it.
Please don't do that. I would hate you. Gisele is also like number one, like tea spiller. She would be great on this show.
If we had subtitles, you would have just seen the word fear at the bottom of Lauren's screen. If y'all could have seen her face. Like,
it would say pure embarrassment.
Yes. Wait. Can I pause you on that for a second? Because you talk about tea spilling. Let me take it back to the circle for a second. I've heard about tea spilling in the recent months. This isn't the first time I had heard it, but I hear it a lot watching that show.
Yeah.
There's another phrase that I learned in this show, and I don't fully know the definition. I think I picked up on it via context, but it's called like being kiki or having kiki. Like,
yeah.
What does that mean? Does that mean to have a one-on-one conversation? Like, what does that mean?
It basically is like a good conversation between buddies. Like, you know, like when you get like, maybe like have a couple drinks and like spill some secrets, like that would be a kiki.
Okay, so you can have a good kiki whilst spilling.
Do you want to hear a phrase? Like, I learned this week?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I had never heard, and y'all will probably both know it. I learned this from Jetpacks and Roller Skates.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Pixel fucking.
No, never heard of that.
This. Yeah.
Okay, so what it means, my understanding, because I looked it up. I had to find out where this came from. My understanding is it comes from the film industry and what people would do. Like, let's say they were trying to apply these like certain effects and these like colorations and this or that to the film. And they would get so absorbed with like the filters that they were working with that they wouldn't even like step back and just pay attention to like the framing of the scene and the shot and the meaning of it. That's what I'm trying to say, the meaning. They get so sucked into the technical aspect of it that they miss the emotional impact of what they're working with. So pixel fucking is to not see the forest for the trees is what it is. It's just a more creative way of saying that.
This ends our vocab session for the week.
Next, we move into inappropriate hieroglyphics.
So my understanding is you could spill some tea and let's kiki talking about Andrew's pixel f***ing. Does that work?
Yes. Yeah.
That sounds like that checks out.
That was really good. You used it all in a sentence.
Bad libs.
Now you have to spell them all. I'm just kidding.
Bad libs.
All right. I'm going to be quick and finish off my little Real Housewives vacation casting. Leah McSweeney from Real Housewives of New York. She is great. I think you could throw her in with anybody.
I was going to say, is she the heavy drinker? But that's all of them.
Yeah, well, she's sober now, I think. But she was the one who got naked like all of last season.
New York is, they're rough. They're rough.
I mean, yeah, big time. Especially last season. So you got to get like a real Salt Lake City person in there, I think, because it's so new. So I would pick Heather Gay because I think she's going to stick around and like one of the more recognizable people. Plus, she's good at playing housewives. Like, she understands the show very well and would be good on the show. And finally, last but not least, Lisa Vanderpump. Bring her back. They still have her as like part of the Bravo family because she is not on Real Housewives, but she is on Vanderpump Rules and stuff. So she's still like around.
You like Vanderpump? Or you just like her because she will be drama?
I want her in this group. I think she would be great because she's a good instigator and she'll get everybody wasted. Like, she'd be the one like hosting for everybody. So I think it would be good.
She'll instigate and storm out of the room. Here's what surprised
me. Well, they also need to on the show have the like classic housewife room fight situation, but they're not going to because they're playing nice.
Lock
I think
the doors. Here's what's bizarre to me. Our community, there's two things that whenever it comes up, like, people come out of the woodwork to talk about. Wrestling.
Yeah,
like, for whatever reason, we have a massive wrestling subculture within our Slack.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. It's there. Actually, there's three things. Holiday ornaments. just kidding.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Christmas tree decorating.
Yeah. We've got a Christmas, crazy yeah. Christmas tree.
Oh man.
But the other one is this like reality TV, like Real Housewives and Bachelor and whatever. Mm-hmm. There's actually a channel in our Slack called Reality TV. Someone posted this link this morning and there were 70 messages over the span of the next like 25 minutes talking about this stuff. People just love it. So if that's interesting to you, there's that channel. If it's not interesting to you, just don't join it and you won't hear about it.
Yeah.
Ta-da. So,
but also wrestling. There's also a wrestling channel. I should have spelled it wrestling. I did not. It is actually spelled wrestling. But man, that... apparently it's a big deal. I guess I assumed that it had like gone the way of the dodo, and it clearly has not.
Oh no! Like just from like going to comic conventions, there's a huge subculture of like wrestling stuff. Like they always have wrestling stuff there, and like I've never been into it, but I don't have anything against it either. But yeah, it's always there. People love it. It looks like fun
to wrestle.
All of it, yeah.
All right, next time we're all together, the three of us, we're going in a cage match. No. Three will enter.
I'm gonna get some
both
training.
Of us Listen, both of us yeah. will walk out.
Listen, in the tension between fight or flight, I have flight, which is not the really is not the one that I should have rolled, but that's what I've got.
Then I stand. So you're saying I stand a chance in our wrestling match?
I'm saying you have to catch me, so yes, you do stand a chance because I'm not going to outrun you.
He's not going to hit you, and he's not going to be able to outrun you, so I think the odds are pretty good in your favor.
But I will cry.
You will feel terrible about yourself.
Yeah.
That is true.
So if you want video of someone crying while you punch them or pull their ears or whatever you do, the internet will hate you, and that can be arranged.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a proposition. That sounds weird.
Let's move on, shall we?
Let's move on.
I'm all done. We're ready for master categories.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, let's take it out of this table and head over to those master categories. The categories every week when we talk about the dice we rolled the week before. Those dice give us our categories. We pick our topics based on those categories. And that's what we're going to do today. Patrick, you rolled your dice 2 weeks ago, and we're letting you keep that dice, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, I heard the whole thing that happened. Because initially I rolled past gaming, and then y'all re-rolled television for me. But y'all did not re-roll a time frame. So I assumed that I could keep past. Yeah. That's what I assumed, is I should keep past because you didn't re-roll that. But you said you would let me choose. Now, that said, one of you then went on to roll gaming for this episode. So it would make sense to talk about gaming. Do you see, like, I had to go through all this, but I listened. So that means I need to talk about
past
television. It's
the first episode you've listened to since episode 203.
took me so much more time to edit that episode. So I'm talking about past television. Now, here's how this is going to work. We're going to talk about the Oscars, which just happened this past week.
Good.
But the way we're talking about this is we're talking about something that's outside of its prime. It is from a time of television past, and that would be more broadly...
A bygone era, you would say?
Of award shows, and that's exactly what it is. So to kick this off, I think first I want to give an idea of just the state of it, and then we'll talk a little bit about an overview of what happened, and then maybe what needs to change, which I think the short answer is probably a lot. But I did want to really quick just give you this this overview. So if you were to go back to 2001, if we went back a decade, Steve Martin hosted that year. The ratings from that year, 42.9 million people tuned in. All right, well, so that's it. That's 10 years ago.
Yes.
If you fast forward 3 years, I'm sorry, just 2 years later into 2003, that had dropped to 33 million people. All right, that was also Steve Martin hosting. Now, it then does fluctuate. So we do see it actually go back up to 43 again, and then it slowly kind of works its way down, getting down to 32 million in 2008. Jon Stewart hosted that year. And then we see it have a little bit of a fluctuation up. We had a high point with Steve Martin again, and this is when the Hurt Locker won. So this would be 2010. And it did maintain for several years. It actually managed to kind of stay right in that high 30, low 40 mark for a few years. Yeah. But then, starting in 2014 till now, it has been a steady decline. Okay. Wait. I'm sorry. We're going back 20 years, not 10 years.
I was
going
to say something, but I was like, didn't get a good chance. But that's how messed
up. Like, in my brain, saying 2001 is only 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, so
I heard this. This is like an on-point, off-point topic. This past week, I heard someone say, we are as far away from the 90s as when we were born, we were from the 60s.
Yeah, think it's about bizarre. Bizarre.
Isn't that a crazy thing to think about?
So anyway, so now going back to 7 years ago, this is when we start the decline. All right. So 2015, 37 million, 2016, 34 million, 2017, 32 million, 2018, 26 million, coming up to 2020 to 23 million. And then finally this year, it dipped below 10 million. So I believe the rating I've seen is 8.5 million for this year. And again, the past 7 years have just been if you were to chart this, it's a line heading down. There's not a lot of fluctuation. So even though we had some ups and downs before then, some big swings, and some of those swings are due to culturally what was happening. Like 1 year during the Oscars, when we had one of those down years in the 30s, it's because I think we were invading Iraq or something and people were watching that on TV. You know, so we've had some fluctuations because of those type of events. Mm-hmm. But really, the last 7 years, it's been a drastic fall off. Again, going from 40 million 7 years ago to 8.5 million this year from a rating standpoint. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I understand it's easy to talk about pandemic and it's easy to talk about not a lot of movie offerings this past year. And we're going to circle back to that in just a second. But all that aside, the drop off didn't start 12 months ago. It's very clearly been happening for the last 7 years.
Yeah.
And it was going to happen again this year either way. So taking a step back from that, set the stage for everyone of what this year's event was like. I mean, we have an idea of a previous years, what we've probably, if we've seen Oscars before now, we know what that looks like. But this year was pretty wildly different. So set the stage for everybody.
Yeah. So they did set a rule ahead of time that was different than other award shows this year that was like, if you are on Zoom, you are not coming. You are not allowed. You can't only give
an acceptance speech.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, they did have locations where people could go across the world. Like they had a like banquet hall in London where like a bunch of people were supposed to go. And like that's where they were filming from. And like that was about as like remote, quote unquote, as you could get. Like they had very specific like, I don't know, like locations where they were filming. And you're either at one of those or you were not going to be on TV. It's basically what they were saying. That's cool. Is kind of what I understood. And they had everybody sitting at like dinner tables, not like in the theater chairs like normal so that they're more socially distanced. I think it was like more obvious that people were drunk if you ask me.
That's funny.
I don't know if you agree.
Like neither one of us watched it, so we don't have a
I've seen pieces of it for sure.
Oh, okay.
So the night of the Oscars, I was volunteering for something, and so I didn't get to see the live performance. Mackenzie recorded it. I got to come back and watch the bits I wanted to watch. But it was a bit jarring seeing it because in my head, I was still expecting the dark room, the auditorium, maybe some distancing. And it was completely different.
Yeah. And so they did have a big stage and everything like normal, but they did like they've been doing at a lot of other award show where like they would have the like people on opposite sides of the stage. If anybody needed to be on stage at the same time, like the presenter and the award winner, things like that.
But those rooms that it looked like when like how Schitt's Creek did their setup for the Emmys, where it was like a banquet room and they would cut to that video screen. You know what I'm talking about?
I haven't watched all of Schitt's Creek, so I don't know the reference, but
No, I'm talking about the Emmys when they were the whole Schitt's Creek team reserved like a banquet room or something like that, and they were at different tables.
Kind of,
and they all kept cutting back to that. Okay, because that's kind of what I'm picturing in my head.
Yeah, like it kind of reminded me like if you've ever been to like a gala, like there's these big round tables where like they kind of group people by their movie or you know, mm-hmm. whatever. So it made sense. And then there were like, I would say two other big differences. They decided to not do any clips of movies or montages like they usually do during the Oscars. I think the only one that they had was the In Memoriam montage.
Wow.
I hated that personally. But we can kind of get into that a little more later. I think it made it, really dry, honestly. They did, because of that, like, I think part of the idea was like, take that away and you'll have more time for speeches. So like there was a lot more speeches. There were a lot longer speeches, and they didn't do the thing where they play anybody off. They just like did away with that this year. Like a lot of speeches were really emotional, in my opinion. Like I teared up, like, you know, with the like sound guy's acceptance speeches. And then I think the whole thing was directed by Aaron Sorkin, which is like really, really weird to say. And they wanted it to feel like a movie. And I would say it did more than normal, but I just don't think that that idea really translates well to this, because it's like, this is a broadcast event and it doesn't need to look like a movie.
If anyone's going to do that, though, it's going to be Aaron Sorkin to take like an everyday situation and try to make it feel cinematic. That is a Sorkin-y
You're totally right. Yeah. To and I think this was on The Watch where I heard this this morning, but they were the podcast and they were saying it's like, everybody knew ahead of time this would be a weird year for the Oscars because of COVID. If there was ever a time to like take a shot and try something weird, this was it. And so like, hey, at least they tried something new, for better or worse. The ending was kind of the other big thing that everyone is talking about, where they did Best Picture was not the last award. The Best Actor was the last award. Everybody, I self included, assumed that with that happening, Chadwick Boseman would be the one who won, and then it would be like this super emotional ending point. But what ended up happening is that Anthony Hopkins won for The Father, which, I'm sorry, I have not even heard of that movie. So it was really anticlimactic, and he was not there because he was asleep. Like he didn't want to come in to one of the locations. It didn't work for him, and so like there was no acceptance speech whatsoever for this last award either. So that was just this big, like, womp, womp, womp.
Yeah. In fairness, I think all actors do sleep.
I meant, like, he lives on the other side of the world, so it was nighttime. It really was, like, not convenient.
Sure. Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, The Father looks incredibly good. It's got Anthony Hopkins opposite Olivia Colman, and I just absolutely love Olivia Colman.
Me too.
And
now that I know about it, I want to see it, but I had never heard of it prior to last night.
It's a guy, it's from the previews, it makes it seem like that he's coming to grips with the fact that he has Alzheimer's. And because of that, I just couldn't go see the movie. Like, emotionally, I couldn't go see the movie. It looks fantastic, and the performances are supposed to be amazing, and I have great respect for both of them. It wasn't a movie I was going to go out and watch right now. I know that Boseman or Chadwick had picked up kind of all the other awards. And so there's a, you know, if you only get the Golden Globe, like maybe you're not sure if it could happen, but given he had just swept all the awards for award season for the Best Actor category. And so I think it felt a bit like a given walking into the Oscars. And so then to end on the, it's an upset. Oh, and the guy's not here to get it. So see ya, was just kind of threw everybody off.
Yeah, it felt so anticlimactic when Questlove was like, "And I'm done DJing for the night, bye." I'm like, wait, that was actually the end? What? Like,
that's interesting. My biggest upset of it was that I made a wager with Mariana at who was going to win Best Animated Picture, and I lost. And so she got to pick what character from the winning movie got to be drawn, and I had to draw the cat version of Joe Gardner from Soul, and of which, first of all, I hate cats. Second of all, I'm completely deathly allergic to them. So I'm sitting there sneezing the whole time I'm drawing this
thing.
Even
just looking at pictures of cats.
Just even looking at a picture of a cat.
No, he brought in a model.
Yeah, I brought in
a life model. Method drawing.
That was my biggest upset with the Oscars.
Well, the fact that Husevic lost ruined the night for me, clearly.
They also didn't do any music performances, and that sucked as well.
They did. They didn't do them during the show. So typically your best song nominees...
They did them on TikTok a week before.
I don't think that was a good choice.
Yeah, typically you're the nominees would play... Like, all the songs would get played during the evening, but instead they played them all during the pre-show beforehand. Now, I do think they were live performances, or at least I think some of them were live performances, but I think they all happened during like the red carpet. They didn't happen during the performance.
And I totally missed that because I just skipped the red carpet this year.
Yep. And you can go see it. They did a live performance from Husevic, of Husevic, with the girl that sang it originally, and then like a children's choir. And there's like fireworks in it. It's pretty affecting. I've cried the three times I've watched it. I think it's a beautiful song, and it's a loser. So, I did see the winner, Nomadland. I talked about the film on the podcast, and if you want to hear if you want to hear us talk about that, we can link that in the show notes so you can hear the review of that movie. Okay, all that said, the Oscars are going down. Soderbergh, they came in this year and they said, we don't want it to feel like COVID is happening. And by the way, I got the numbers slightly wrong. They've revised the numbers. The watch numbers were 10.4 million this year. So it didn't dip under 10 million, but it's still gone down, what do we say, 30 million in the last 7 years?
Yeah.
Okay. So they were big about not wanting it to feel like COVID was happening in the world. They sent out a big letter to all the actors and actresses are going to participate. We talked about this on the show already, and they were very clear that we don't want people showing up like in pajamas or something like that. And they were actually...
No tie-dyed sweatshirts here.
Exactly. They were pointing to things that had happened, but they were very clear that this is a serious formal event, and we expect, you know, people to behave in a serious and formal way. And then they also, that's when they laid out that if you weren't going to be in person, you couldn't give an acceptance speech. That was part of that as well. They weren't going to fool with any of that because they didn't want to basically acknowledge that those are prevalent things in the world. And they and I imagine there's a part of it of wanting to keep some level of what they would deem integrity of the show itself. All of that said, this brings us, we had this conversation last time when we talked about that letter. We talked about the fact that I'm not really sure who takes these shows seriously. I don't know that the performers take them seriously, and I don't know that people watching take them seriously. So this brings us back to the topic of, well, is the issue this year, is it pandemic? Is it that people hadn't seen the movies, or is it that there weren't a lot of movies? And certainly
to those... I think this year has compounded several of those issues by how they chose to do things, just to be fair. But like that, it's kind of a bigger tangent.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, certainly those things are going to have an effect. But yeah. Again, we're on year 7 of a very, very obvious, clear, steady decline. Mm-hmm. So it is not only those things that are creating the issue. You know, to remove those performances, to remove these clips that could help contextualizing winners if you haven't seen the show, to remove those bits of levity... And it still run over time. I mean, it still ran, what, over 2.5 hours in length for the show, even though they took all those bits out. It really seems to me that this, so Oscars specifically, because I don't think all award shows are doing this. We're talking about Oscars right now. It reminds me of the argument against streaming films being able to be in film festivals. This idea that, Netflix isn't allowed at Cannes because they don't take filmmaking seriously, you know, they're not allowed over, Amazon's not allowed here because they don't care about film. If they cared about film, they wouldn't run a streaming platform. They would be launching everything in theaters and have like 90 days of exclusivity and all that kind of stuff. And these people talk about it from the point of view of the integrity of an art form. But that means that the Oscars has to make a decision. And that decision has to be, do you want to take on that fight from that direction? If you do, that's fine. And your numbers will continue to dwindle year over year. You'll get more and more serious. And you can just turn the program into a long form lecture about film history. That's fine. We can pull out more. I mean, I think they played trivia halfway through. Yank that out because that someone could have found that fun. Or even
that
though it was
Glenn
totally
Close
cringy.
Thing was- So cringy.
Yeah.
So bad.
Yes. Ugh. So the point is, let's pull that bit out. So we can go the route of only the people that respect it the way we respect it are allowed to participate, and it has to be this way. We can go that route, but it will just slowly die and you're...
Oh, I just was going to say that I think this year's Oscars played to that side of this argument 100% by taking away those clips. And because like you said, like... It's very rare that everybody sees all the movies that are nominated, like for all the categories, you know, like it's a lot of stuff. So getting those little clips really does help you, you know, at least be like, oh, that's who's in this movie and stuff. And so taking that all away made it so dry. Like it was, yeah, I'm sure movie people who are obsessed with this shit love it, but it was too minutiae.
Andrew like, too, and I, if we go back pre-pandemic, the year before the pandemic, Andrew and I are in the 0.1% of movie watchers. Okay. Mm-hmm. We went to Alamo Draft House and saw a film there 85 times that year. And that does not include if we went to a different theater because Alamo didn't have a showtime that week or whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People don't watch 85 movies a month, all right? People, I forget the number, but I think it's 1.2 a month is the average. That's what MoviePass was banking on and then lost their asses. So the average person watches...
I think you mean to say they lost their assets.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. So I'm waiting for that documentary, Hulu. Get on it. So 1.2 is the average, assuming you don't incentivize them with a MoviePass-style subscription. We watched, again, 80 or 90 over the course of a year.
You're watching at least 10 a month. Like
That's or 8 a month or whatever. But that's certainly more. It's certainly more. Okay. I still watch the Oscars and don't know half the nominees. Like, even watching that many films, we get to the best picture category and I don't know half the best picture noms. And so my point is to echo what you're saying, which is, I don't think, I disagree. If someone says, well, people aren't watching the Oscars because they don't know the films. I don't think people watch the Oscars because they knew all the films before. I think that it can be enjoyable to see the humans that are behind these performances you've seen, to see the humans that are these celebrity, but to get to hear them talk or see them interact with other celebrity in the same room, to get to watch the red carpet. I think all those things can be fun and insightful on a level, and they're humanizing on a level, and there's just grandeur around it. I mean, if you're sick of watching the same sitcom or the same show every week, or you've run out of seasons of The Circle Brazil, and maybe you could say they're a couple months too late and they actually should have kept the original show date, but I would argue that maybe people would be itching for some more excitement on TV after having pandemic and losing a lot of the normalcy or losing a lot of things off your slate. This could have been an opportunity, I think, to capitalize on the fact that there maybe has been a lack of content and a lack of normalcy. Certainly it hurt it, but I just disagree with that. I think that the Oscars are continuing to dehumanize the people that they're awarding. They continue to make it feel like rich people handing awards and pats on the back to other rich people. And they're trying to enforce this level of reverence for their art form to the point of being willing to alienate anyone that doesn't see it the way they see it. And I think that this could be a springboard to excite more people to want to go to the theaters, to excite more people to want to learn about their favorite actor or actress or this or that or whatever. And I think they're doing the opposite right now.
Yeah. I think like maybe something that like I was realizing as you just said it is that it used to feel like much more of a celebration of all of this stuff and like really just celebrating what's awesome about film and these actors and all these people who made these great movies that like really kept us going through the year or whatever. Like that really could have been something that they lean on more, I think. But now it's just like people always say to me, like the Oscars are boring, but I like watching them. This year, they truly were boring. Like they need to find some way to like just make it feel like a party again, because that's what's fun about it. Like you like watching the celebrities like be happy there and hang out with everybody else and get dressed up and be part of the spectacle and this big celebration. And like, that's what I think would really help them.
When 9/11 happened, SNL had to make a decision that week of whether or not to still do their show.
Sure.
And it was a very big decision of like, do we really need, like, should we be focused on comedy right now? Should we, like, this is going on in our city, but then also in our country and our world, this is a very serious thing. And is it inappropriate for us to do this and this and that? And ultimately they decided that the exact thing people needed was a moment of levity and that other extension of humanity in the time of crisis. And I think if the Oscars had the opportunity to take the posture of, you know what, we are all humans and we've all been having to go through this just like you've been having to go through this. And hopefully these things that we've been working on this past year maybe brought some comfort to the situation, but then here's also how maybe y'all brought comfort to us as well. I think there was this opportunity to create this really human event. Yes. And instead, they said, let's cut out the Zoom calls. Let's make sure everybody dresses their best. Let's make sure that it doesn't feel like COVID times.
Yeah.
And let's dig even deeper into film history. Let's dig even deeper into research and this and that. And I just don't think it
less accessible.
Yeah.
It's just it becomes even more the love child of the Hollywood elite. Like that's what it becomes. Mm-hmm. And that's
so with all that said, when I say something needs to change, I mean someone needs to throw away the playbook and start from scratch. Without doing that, I don't think the Oscars comes back next year and doubles their numbers. I don't think that happens. And
oh no.
Because again, people could say, it's pandemic. It's not going to. So it'll be interesting to see if anything comes from this as far as looking to change. But it's just at a point where the ideology behind the event has to be different. Changing a runtime and changing a host isn't going to cut it. So,
yeah. But the lack of hosts also don't help.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Just let Ricky Gervais come in and shit on everybody for 30 minutes and then send them home. I'd much rather watch that. All right. That is my extended diatribe. Lauren, what was your category this week?
Okay, I think I can keep it pretty short. So I got past games, and I'm going to talk about one of my favorite video games ever. And I've been thinking about this game a lot lately because there's actually a sequel finally coming out this year. So the game I'm going to talk about is called Psychonauts. It originally came out for PlayStation 2, and you can... No, 3, sorry. And you can play it on Xbox and PC now still. I think they've updated it so you can play it on Steam if you have like a newer PlayStation. So there's lots of ways to play this if this ends up getting your interest. So this game is one of those games that like a lot of people haven't heard of. It was not like a huge commercial success, but it's always on those lists of like cult classic games and like best games ever. It makes a lot of those lists. So I'm not the only one who likes this game, I promise. It also raised enough money like on just Kickstarter to like make their sequel. And like I joined that Kickstarter in 2015 and I'm still just patiently waiting for this game and I'm still excited. They've also had awesome backing like rewards and stuff. So kudos to them for figuring that out really well. So the whole plot of this game is you play as Rasputin, who is a kid who runs away from the circus to join psychic summer camp.
I'm on board.
Yeah, it's great. So
no,
he doesn't want
to
be
relation to the other Rasputin.
You'll see. I mean, like, there's lots of stuff with like gypsies and curses and all kinds of stuff. Okay. So like to say that he's maybe not sort of named after him is like silly. So he just goes by Raz, and you are at psychic training camp, and it's kind of set in like a whole summer camp setting with the other kids. And like there are activities within the summer camp where you're like trying to do scavenger hunts and collect arrowheads and things like that. But the real game is at this training camp, you are training to be a psychonaut, which is basically like a psychic spy. Think like James Bond meets Charles Xavier, sort of. The like camp counselors are these like trained psychonauts, and they're trying to like teach you all your different psychic abilities. So like by the end of the game, you have like telekinesis, levitation, pyrokinesis, clairvoyance, like you get all kinds of cool powers. And the way that you like play all the levels is like super inventive. So like there's a little like door. It's like a little tiny door, and he literally puts it on people's foreheads. It opens and you get to go inside of their minds, and each character's mind world like matches their personalities, and like they pick different art styles that like match with them as well. And so it's like really fun every time you get to a new character to see just what the world is going to be like. So for example, like the two like lead psychonaut counselors are Sasha 9 and Mia Vordello. And like Sasha 9 is like German, very serious, very scientific, very like straight. So when you go inside of his mind, everything is like literally around a giant white cube that's kind of like decorated like a Mondrian painting. So like very mid-century minimalist design style for his brain. And then you'll go into Mila's brain, and she's like a very like funky party girl. So everything in her brain looks like a 60s psychedelic big party. And it's like really fun. And then like later in the game, you go into an insane asylum, and you get to go into those people's minds. And I think that's where they just like go totally nuts. So like you have to play a chess game with Napoleon Bonaparte's crazy grandson. There's a black light, black velvet painting world that's really, really cool. I love how they like change the art style of the game for each different little mind world. It's like so creative how they do this stuff. And there's really great like little extras and stuff and levels. Like when you play Mario, if you go through a level, like you're supposed to get coins and like little extra things like that. Well, in this game, they make, since you're all in somebody's mind, the things like that are you have to clear people's mental cobwebs or match the luggage tags on their emotional baggage. And so like I love all the like puns and things that they have with like figments of your imagination or like another thing you can collect to get points. So this game is just like a really great game. It's so clever. It's insanely fun to play. The like style of the game is platform adventure game. So like something, it's sort of like Zelda, less tools though, like because you have like the power. So the game I think it plays like closest to is like the original Kingdom Hearts, where you're like, you have to like jump on a lot of things and like get through levels and different obstacles. It's an absolutely awesome game. It's so funny. And but like I said, the sequel is coming out this year, so you will not have to be like me waiting 10 years for a sequel.
Man, it is pretty trippy looking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and I should mention, Scott C. did all of the artwork for this game originally.
I don't love it.
Oh. you just mean visually.
Like visually. Style?
I, obviously, I've never played it, but yeah, the style is so opposite of what appeals to me visually. I'm taking your word that it's actually good, because I would not ever see this and even pick it up. Like I'd be like, what the heck is this?
I do think like the colors are a little muted and stuff, but like once you start playing the game, I do feel like it matches the tone of it pretty well and you get used to it. I've also like followed this studio that does this game and I love their stuff. And like I said, Scott C did all the artwork, so I think that kind of like clicks
it's
a little
bit. It's the characters. Like I do not enjoy the character design or the color palette at all. Yeah.
Well,
I don't know. I'm not bagging on the game because I've obviously never played it. Yeah. But if I'm giving you my first impression is this is not a game that's going to sit on my shelf.
Of a platform game, it may be the Dominion of platform games.
Maybe. Yeah, design-wise. Exactly. So Dominion is a fantastic, what you would argue is maybe the father or grandfather of a deck building game. There are so many dozens and dozens of expansions for it. The game plays really well, but the art in it is terrible in my opinion, so I'll never own it. But it is a fantastic game that I'll never own. This might fall into that category.
And it's amazing that they make money, I assume, hand over fist, because they keep selling it. And they are never going to update that artwork. I did hear an argument that to update now would be difficult because of the amount of like expansions and add-ons. That to update the base game, you'd have to update everything.
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about this Dominion.
Dominion, yes.
It's an ugly looking game for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's how I feel about this. And yeah, I mean, it seems to be highly rated by what I'm looking at, but it just doesn't, this doesn't appeal to me visually.
Oh, I think when you play in the game, it's really cool. And the level designs are so awesome that like, I love the game. That's not something that I ever thought about.
All right. So you have a link to it in the show notes though, for people to be able to.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll have links to all the good stuff to check out. You can play the game. You can read about the updates on the new one. They have a really cool blog where they've been like sharing how the game updates. And I've learned so much about like game development, just like following this process, like from the beginning. So that's also been cool to just get to know as well.
Yeah.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. All right, well, I'll round us out here. I got art, and I got any time I wanted to talk about, and so time frame. And so I saw this documentary on Netflix that I want to talk about. It's a 4-part docuseries. It's a Netflix original, and it's called This Is a Robbery.
Mm-hmm.
And the subtitle is The World's Greatest Art Heist. And so in March 18th of 1990, so we just recently had the anniversary of this, but March 18th, 1990, 13 works of art were stolen from the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum in Boston, Massachusetts. And the events surrounding how that happened are quite extraordinary, and they go into it in depth.
Mm-hmm.
About how this couldn't just be a smash and grab kind of job. It was very well executed and planned out, and who was involved and how did it happen. But with these 13 pieces of art,
Most of which are paintings. Some of them are sketches. Some are from Rembrandt. Like these are very highly sought after, obviously. Almost 200 or almost $250 million for these 13 pieces of art. And so it goes into this web of who could have been involved, how could this have happened, the events that happened afterwards during the investigation. It talks all about the Boston PD all the way to the FBI and members of, like, they talk about members of the Italian mafia and they talk about members of the Irish mafia and all these things. There are murders that arise.
Are there magicians
in the wake of this? There are no magicians.
Because I feel like all like this is singing like Lauren's tune right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, I've watched most of this documentary already. Yeah,
yeah. It's quite a story, and what they did, and what's so unique to me. So they haven't recovered any of the art yet, and it's been
I think that's fascinating.
What is it? It's 31 years now at this point. It's been 31 years. And they haven't recovered any of the art. Now, they have had people who have seen the art at various stages of this, but they haven't been able to apprehend the people because of, without giving things away, they haven't been able to apprehend it. So the art has been seen and has been in people's homes, but not in any time where authorities have been able to seize it. And by the time the authorities get there, either the person is dead or the house has been raided or has been cleared out or whatever. It's crazy. The story is absolutely crazy. But what they've done, the Gardner Museum, I cannot wait. I want to go there. They have, over the years, they have continued to increase the reward. If you can find it now, if you can give them, lead them to an apprehension of the artwork, you stand to make $10 million.
Oh wow!
For bringing them information that actually brings to the apprehension of the.
Doesn't this sound like the start of a zany summer comedy, Andrew? You and me,
absolutely. Yeah,
we team up. How hard could it be?
How hard could it be?
If we're going to get 10.
There's no reason that no one solved this in 30 years. Not at all.
You would spend $9 million to make $10
million. Now, here's the thing. Yeah, that's true.
So
here's
we have thing. $9 million we can spend.
Here's the thing. Let me take this back to the actual thing, because there's some crazy things about this.
Mm-hmm.
They know, or at least they're fairly confident now, through a chain of events, like they've been able to find evidence and find things. They think they know exactly what happened and how it happened and who did it. They think they know all of that. However, all of the people involved are now dead. There is one person left who they believe is involved, and he's not talking. He's like 85 years old, and he has almost died a couple times. He's in prison. I think he's in prison. But he's not talking. And they think that it'll be like a deathbed kind of confession, or once he's gone, then people will feel safe to talk about what happened for anybody who may have been involved. But here's what's so unique about this. Lots of unique things, but here's one of the thing that catches my attention. The museum, still totally operational, they have left all of the frames, the original frames.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
all
yeah.
left. They have put them back on the wall where the artwork goes, as if to say someday these will have the art in it.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a cool. I think that's such a cool, unique way to do that, because you walk in and you can see, like, there's a story here. There's something happened here, and
It's possible that they hung on the wall so long that they discolored in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of repainting the wall, it was just cheaper to rehang the frames.
Sure. Yeah. Most of these rooms, this is the most elegant, like...
Yeah, the museum is beautiful.
The story of the actual museum is absolutely crazy.
I love that they did that, though. That's great.
If at any point, like, what's written in... So Isabella Gardner, she was the curator and the builder of this museum. She was an eccentric rich woman, is what they called her, back whenever this place was built originally. And in her will, it states that if any of the exhibits... get permanently changed. If they renovate anything in any permanent way to change things, not just like a traveling show, but like if anything mm-hmm. permanently changes, then all of the artwork is immediately to be sold, and all of the profits are supposed to go to like an art, like a university or to something,
a charity of her choice. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a beneficiary who will get all of the money if the museum owners ever sell, or if they ever change anything permanently about the, it's such a unique story. And I'm so, sure. I was so enthralled in it, besides the murder and the cover ups. And
so you don't think it was about painting the walls?
I don't think it was, because most of these they were on walls that are what's it called, wallpaper, like really nice wallpaper. Yeah. So
do you think it's velvet wallpaper?
Maybe. Yeah, it may very well be.
I want velvet wallpaper, but it's like $13 a foot.
I know, and that's the point of this topic, was to talk about how the cost of velvet wallpaper has just really skyrocketed.
Yeah.
I would recommend anyone watch this, even if mm-hmm. you're not into art or art history, because it's such an interesting
It's a good
story.
Like true crime documentary, honestly, yeah. like more than yeah. it is like an art history type thing. Sure. Like that stuff yeah. does make it interesting to know how valuable some of these paintings are, I think, like the Rembrandt right. stuff, but it's like that's like the only extra context I think you would have.
Say yeah. the name again.
It's called This Is a Robbery, The World's Greatest Art Heist.
Okay, because right now there are two either shows or documentaries that have come out on Netflix about... So this is an art heist. I think there's another one that came out that's about making reproductions. So my point is, yeah. if you hit your Netflix homepage, you actually might see two of them.
This Is a Robbery is what you're looking
this
for.
This Is a Robbery is the one you're looking this. For. Yeah.
There's a piece of this that I learned some things about art. Art has been used in the past. So they interview lots of known art thieves.
That
right?
was my favorite thing. Like
it's crazy.
Yeah.
Art can be used with the FBI. There's precedent that has been set that art can be used as a bargaining chip with the FBI to get immunity or to get family members or friends out of prison. And so that's why there's a lot of speculation of,
in other words, like it may just be a get out of jail free card people are going
that's
exa- for.
That's ex- and part of wow. the speculation, part of the story is that that's actually what they were stolen for.
Yeah.
And then things kind of went sideways and some people rubbed some people the wrong way and they may have exchanged hands because there was a without giving anything away, I'll kind of speak in vague generalities. Somebody was in prison. A family member was in prison or a family friend was in prison, and there was somebody who was set to testify about where the art was, and they didn't make it to their court date. We'll just say it that way.
Yeah.
And so
they clearly got killed. I don't know what you think you're dancing around. They obviously were murdered.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You said it. I didn't. You said it. Okay,
yeah, allegedly. Yeah.
Their head was chopped clean off.
And that's not like a euphemism headless. Or like a saying or
no.
It'd be a weird euphemism, but
it would be a weird euphemism. But yeah, so
bro, I feel like my head got chopped straight off. You know what I'm saying?
it's a crazy story, and I learned a whole bunch about even the legal system and how some of this stuff works and what there's precedent set for. So
I think
art is incredibly valuable, and history yeah. is incredibly valuable, and the FBI takes that very, very seriously. And I didn't realize how pliable the law was when it came to stuff like that. You know what I yeah. mean? Like that was one of my big takeaways. Like, I can't believe
that you're saying that the law is pliable for people that have assets valued in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't know that
that's a whole other
going to find that as a big shocker.
Sure. But that's a whole nother platform conversation, right. obviously. But it's This Is a Robbery. It's on Netflix. Go watch it. And then we'll hop in the chat and talk about it. But anyway.
Even if like that story that you explained before ends up not being true, that like whole idea of like stealing the paintings for immunity, that would be a really amazing Guy Ritchie movie that I would love to watch.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, there, it it has happened though. Like that story, it's not, it is a true story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I want someone to take the like ideas of this heist and like make a like fictional movie about it. Like have a good time, sure. Just exaggerate the crap out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Like a historical fiction movie.
Yeah.
That, yeah. Okay. I think that's going to be it. So you can find all of this stuff. I know we're going to roll for our dice in just a second, but you can find all this stuff on mofone.network where you can find show notes and links to, we talked about a bunch of stuff. So play some games, buy some toys, watch some things, and do all that stuff. You can find the link to our Slack community there. You should join the conversation there. There are hundreds of people in there. We have conversations all the time about all sorts of random things. So, mm-hmm. Join the conversation in there. You can buy some stuff on the site. You can watch lots of, you can listen to lots of really, really incredible interviews from over the years. You can go over to our YouTube page and watch some Dungeons and Dragons, stuff. You can watch the drawing board. There's lots of content out there. There's mm-hmm. lots of stuff. So, do that.
We should have a Patreon episode coming out first part of May.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, real, real soon.
Very, very soon. And we should have another drawing board in May.
Yes.
That's mm-hmm. two things to look forward to on that side. And if you're not following around with the D&D campaign that's going on. Yeah, Dungeons and Designers is happening right now. That is going along swimmingly. They just dropped another episode yesterday or 2 days ago. So mm-hmm. definitely go to the YouTube and check that out. YouTube.com/MO1podcast. There's a lot of stuff there. The network is popping.
Yeah.
The thing I was going to say, which I missed, I'm going to miss you guys next week. Next week is my anniversary and it's my birthday. And I am going to not be here next week. So I'm just going to I'm just letting you all know that I'm sad and I won't be here.
But it's your birthday, so you get to do whatever you want. That's how it works.
Why are you licking your lips? That makes me sad.
I'm just imagining how good my birthday is going to be.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm going to totally...
I was like, yeah, what are you going to do for your birthday?
Chop off
a
head, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, you're gonna chop off the old head, as they say.
Yeah.
Well, we look forward to getting a recap when you do come back and shower us with details of your incredible birthday versary. Your birthday versary. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay,
Earth Day.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true.
17.
Okay.
Oh, wait, you could say your line if you want to, and I'll edit it in.
Let's roll our dice.
Ooh, Patrick, you are the first person to get the podcast/YouTube category this week.
Quack, quack, quack.
All right. I hope it's not passed.
Pass.
Just do our archive.
It has to be from the 17th century.
I clearly rolled the wrong dice because I got a 5. So hold on.
Extra
3.
Special. All right.
Future. That's a good
future.
One.
That's
okay. Yeah.
Really
yeah.
Good
one.
Right. Lauren, why don't you roll?
Okie dokie. I got a 14. 2 weeks in a row. Sorry. And that is art. All right.
Okay. And what's your modifier?
Oh, my bad. 4. Anything I want.
Nice. That's good for you because you've been pigeonholed pretty severely these last several weeks. All right, here we go. I rolled a 7 and a 4.
7 is design.
Okay, there we go.
Cool.
Hey, everybody. This was a good episode. We talked mm-hmm. a lot.
Yes, we did.
It was fun. It was good for us all to be back in the same room. We shall enjoy it
temporarily before Patrick leaves again. Because
yeah. Next week, I'll be getting pigeonholed severely.
On that note, we're going to get out of here. I'm Andrew.
I'm Lauren.
I'm Patrick.
Pigeonholed.
Adios.